sound set.
The Disciplined Investor is all about you, your money, and the markets. Sit back and get ready for this edition of the Disciplined Investor Podcast.
This episode of the Disciplined Investor is sponsored by Horowitz & Company. If you're looking for a portfolio manager, look no further. Horowitz & Company, from seed through harvest, cultivating financial success.
Tough week for markets as the S&P and Dow are lower. Oil rockets higher, GDP revised lower. And of course, we're looking at China, because what's going on in the Chinese stock market? What do you have to say?
股市泡沫.
That's right. Could be a bubble. All this and much more on episode number 415 of the Disciplined Investor Podcast.
股市泡沫.
Well, hello, Andrew Horowitz here, and it is the Disciplined Investor Podcast for the beginning of June 2015. First week of the month is about to kick off, and we're going to have a lot of controversy, I'll tell you right now, when it comes to looking at what's going on with regard to the overall GDP. Is it right? Is it wrong? We saw a print of a 0.7 to the negative side, which was a revision from the last 0.2 on the positive side. So almost an entire percentage point lower for GDP in the last print. There's been a lot of discussion about, is the first quarter of GDP's right? Seasonality doesn't seem to calculate correctly. And we saw CNBC leading the charge, saying, oh, wait a minute, things are much better. But remember something, while they're going to come in with a brand new way of looking at quarter one, quarter two is going to be affected. Because when you can't just have one quarter being revised, all of them have to revise to the new seasonality numbers. And as such, probably what we're going to see is a much different quarter two. I would suspect, just thinking, that maybe what we're going to see is that quarter one is going to be revised higher. And from there, quarter two will be revised lower. But one of the big things you have to remember is that what we're seeing is a negative GDP print in the first quarter. And if it stays negative and the second quarter actually goes negative as well, what do you have? Well, you have a classical call for a recession. Two quarters in a row of negative GDP is a recession. Doesn't seem like a recession, doesn't feel like a recession, but there are some clear slowdown signals on the economic front and on the earnings front and the outlook. A lot of that due to the fact that the dollar has been much stronger, bond yields have been stronger, and in their infinite wisdom, the Fed, who has not actually raised rates as of yet, has done so in a very strange way because they've done so with their communication strategy. As they are looking to increase the rate sometime, maybe by the end of the year, maybe next year, just the first quarter possibly, dependent on their various signals that they get, the dots, so to speak, on the economics, the fact is that just the very talk of it has done a lot to shake up the currencies. The dollar is moving higher, and bonds, obviously, rates had moved higher for some time, came back a little bit as we saw less than stellar results from the economic front. And as such, the whole point is that they are looking to clearly just slow down the economy, or at least show a signal that they're willing to do so. And the effect has been that the economy has slowed. It's no mystery what has happened. It's clearly a signal by the Fed that is causing a lot of consternation and concern by investors of the fact that there is going to be this movement that is significantly, a significant move from the zero line. Still a very low interest rate by all standards, extremely low in a way that is still stimulative for an economy. So you add this up, you put it all together, and what we're going to find probably is something to the effect of a revision that makes the quarter one look better. But I wonder what's going to happen with quarter two. If in fact we get over the zero line, and if in fact we do see that there is a much better number on the first quarter, will it be so much that it revises to a point that is not negative, and second quarter being revised down because some of it has to move from first quarter to second quarter, obviously. What we're going to find is that second quarter is much lower than anticipated. And I would think that the positive light on this, the spin, so to speak, is going to be saying, well, you know what, it's just a revision. And the fact that, you know, you always look for the glass half empty in some cases and half full in others. Well, in this case, I think we're going to have to look at it as half full, because when we're looking at the GDP revision and we want to see what happened really, not that this, you know, what has happened over the last 40 years, the way they calculated it, the new numbers, because somehow the first quarter is coming in weak. It's coming in soft. So we have to revise it, make it look better. So we change the whole system and make it look better, but second quarter is going to look a bit worse. We'll see how this plays out. I'm kind of curious to see. You know, on the other hand, does the data really make any difference right now? It makes a difference when it comes to the Fed. The Fed is all things to the market. Let's face it. The truth of the matter is that the excess of liquidity, the amount of stimulus that's being put on, not only by the Fed here in the United States, but around the world, is clearly, unquestionably, one of the main drivers that we've been seeing right now for markets. Not the only driver. Clearly, merger and acquisition activity, dividends, buybacks, and some of the earnings that we've seen over time have been extreme drivers for markets. But all of that is predicated on low interest rates. Remember that. Oh, well, we have good M&A activity going on. Why? Because it's really cheap to borrow money. And in borrowing money, what you could do is build up your cash reserves. And you build up your cash reserves, guess what happens? You have money to spend. You have money to spend on things like mergers and acquisitions. You have money to spend on things like buybacks, paying dividends. So the ultra low interest rates has caused an extreme amount of activity in the corporate area when it comes to activism, if you will. I don't mean activism in terms of hedge fund activism. I mean activism in terms of them doing something to engineer better financials for themselves, which may in fact be good. The truth of the matter is that when we see some of these acquisitions that have gone on, we see that Altera now looks like it's being bought by Intel. We see a lot of acquisitions and mergers. We saw Humana putting itself up for sale on Friday. Stock jumped 20% on Friday with the notion that they're looking to potentially sell. I'm not sure how that's going to play out. We see that Time Warner and we see that Charter Communications, and the list goes on and on of what we've been witnessing recently just in the last months. And that happens to be because the idea that if, in fact, a low interest rate environment is no longer here, it's going to get tougher to get money cheap. And if money isn't as cheap, therefore, the targeting of these companies becomes more expensive. Why not do it now when money's so cheap? If you're in business and you want to expand and you want to borrow money, don't you want to do it in a lower interest rate environment? And as such, if you think that interest rates are going to go up even a small amount in the near future, or even if you have the inkling that this is a low point in history, aren't you going to be that much more active in going out and getting cash, that much more motivated to go get money to borrow so that you can do something with? If nothing else, just keep it on your books at these low costs so that, you know what, one day you could do something with it. Now, meanwhile, at the same time, even with all the share buybacks that we've seen, even with all the reductions that we saw in terms of analyst expectations for earnings, still companies are having a struggle. Somewhere in, you know, depending on whether you look at Bloomberg or Thomson Reuters or Capital One IQ or S&P IQ, what's it called? S&P Capital IQ. Depending on where you look, you'll see that anywhere from a 60% beat on the bottom line and anywhere from about maybe up to about 65%. On the top line, anywhere from about 45% to about 60% beats. So last quarter, we saw a real letdown, even though there were some good beats with revised low earnings low being revised lower. The fact is the beat rate was much lower than had been historically. So we look at why the market has been, while it's been kind of moving up a bit and kind of just grinding higher ever so slightly, the fact is there's a lot of tentative investors out there wondering whether or not it makes sense at these valuations, generally speaking, to be investing. Now, there are some great valuations that have recently come up. Look at the transportation index. I mean, you're just seeing the airlines get obliterated with the ever since the capacity comment that came out a couple of weeks ago, oil prices moving up. Oil was up 5% on Friday. A lot of reasons for that. Maybe we'll get into that in a second. But the fact of the matter is that we see that there are some bargains, quote unquote, in the various sectors, like maybe energy if oil can stabilize, maybe transportation if some of the selling here has been overdone. Look at things like JetBlue, Southwest, Delta Airlines, American Airlines. You know, some of these are seeing some very aggressive selling. Spirit Airlines as well. There'll be a basing coming here soon, and the question is going to be whether or not these companies have hedged out their oil plays enough to keep up with their profitability, especially with the excess capacity coming online. One of the big concerns, we mentioned this, was that a few non-traditional carriers are coming in and adding to capacity in the U.S., and as such, the competition has gone up dramatically. I mean, now they're seeing that, you know, wait a minute, we had this much capacity on, all of a sudden we're seeing that much capacity come on, therefore there's going to be some pricing wars going on, a lot more choices that can be made too. So there's going to be a lot of things that go into this whole dynamic of the seat cost and the seat profitability for many of these companies. So I'd keep a watch on that. Keep a watch on the airlines. Keep them on your watch list. I think it's something very interesting to take a look at. And then, of course, you have to look at what's going on in the energy sector. Now that gas prices have started to move back up, oil prices up 50% from their lows. And the big question is going to be the rig count, which has been the lowest in years. The production of that to bring up the oil from the earth, is that going to add anymore? Are we going to see the Saudis and various players in the Middle East and OPEC continue to pump, trying to break the back, continue to break the back of the various U.S.-based drillers and therefore the refiners? Two sectors that I think are interrelated that probably be really good to put on your radar right now. On DH Unplugged, and I think on this show, we talked about how we thought that the China situation with the stock market up 100 and plus percent in Shanghai, Hong Kong just crunching along. And what do we think?
股市泡沫.
That's right. The fact is that
股市泡沫.
Stock market bubble. I hate using the word bubble. I really do. I the whole idea of, oh, this is a bubble, that's a bubble. I mean, I think it's an overused situation. Overvalued, undervalued. Also, if you just blatantly throw that out there and you're looking at, well, is something overvalued? Well, based on what? Is it stochastic, a technical indicator? Is it about fundamentals? But let's look at, if you haven't seen, you need to take a look at the Shanghai Index, Shenzhen Index. The parabolic move that was made over the last couple of weeks, we saw that the markets had been invested in very heavily locally for a lot of different reasons. The whole idea that China was slowing down continues to slow down. And the government is going to pump in money into the markets through various measures of allowing for lower reserve ratios at the banks and trying to prop up infrastructure and allowing municipalities off the hook for some of their bad playing, their bad portrayal of what's really going on, and then having to refinance and not finding any buyers of their particular debt. So the main government's going to come in there and, well, bail them out. That's what we do, don't we? Allow this stuff to go on until it can't go on anymore and then just print some money somehow. Well, the fact of the matter is that if you look at the P.E. ratios as a simple measure of the markets for the Shenzhen, we're talking about 100 or so P.E. ratio. Now, that's just absurd. Now, will they actually keep on working through the process to get better earnings due to the fact that the government is doing everything they can to prop up property values, to make sure the banking sector is solid, to add liquidity to markets and stimulus to markets? Well, yeah, they will. But on the other hand, the fact is that the government is also keenly aware that there are way too much, just a tremendous amount of speculation going on within that area. And what's happening? Well, we saw that just last week they raised the margin requirements once again because the leverage amount that was being put on the markets for equities in China is astronomical. Historically and from any perspective, it's just a tremendous amount of money. And that's being done by just the average investor that probably doesn't understand the overall risk factors when they lever up a portfolio. You know, if you take a portfolio of $100,000 and you buy $200,000 worth of stock in there, a 50% move on that on the upside is tremendous. You obviously double your money. But the fact is, any kind of downstroke really is exacerbated when it comes to your total portfolio return. And as such, there could be margin calls, there could be defaults and bankruptcies, etc. So what's happened is that while the Chinese government has been watching what's going on in these various markets and understanding that there has been just literally hundreds of thousands of accounts opened up by retail investors that are pretty much newbies, greenies, they're concerned that the amount of leverage that's being used is really going to be very detrimental if there is any kind of a stock market pullback, which is inevitable, just inevitable. So what they've done is they've gone out and they've actually increased the amount of requirement for margin, or reduced down the margin that you can have on an account, creating a sell signal because, you know, you have to clear out your account to make sure that you're staying within the margin requirements. So the Shanghai was down 6.5%. I think it was on Thursday. It ended up flat after dropping about 4% on Friday. Came back up, climbed pretty hard, because obviously there's still a tremendous amount of froth and speculation in that market, thinking that a 6% drop is something to be bought. Well, that 6% drop doesn't really clean out the amount of speculation, speculative nature of this bubble that is forming. And the fact is that the government will probably continue to come in with more regulations and guidance and tightening of the rules when it comes to markets, because the truth is that they can't sustain those kind of numbers, that kind of movement with the valuation that they have. Therefore, you have to look at this as an overvalued situation and, yes, approaching bubble territory. So as I mentioned some time ago, we've been kind of moving in and out of, and now we're currently short the triple ETF for the Hong Kong Hang Seng 50, which is the symbol Yang, Y-A-N-G. FXI is the base, one time. Yang is a triple. Yin, Y-I-N-N, is the triple long. So Yang is triple short. Yin is the triple long. FXI is the single standalone underlying ETF for all this. They track pretty well. I don't have any complaints on these, how they track. But you'll see that recently the drop in the index has really helped Yang move up dramatically. And we've been there for a little while. We have a nice profit in there currently. I would venture to say that dependent on what happens with a few other factors, which we'll get into, like Greece and the U.S. economics and how it's taken, that we saw the negative 0.7 drop in that area. You have to question how long are people willing to buy Chinese stocks? Maybe we're in a world where none of this matters, where people don't really care. They realize that, you know, if things get bad, so what? Governments are going to come in and just knock it out. They're just going to simply go in and stimulate through some method, whether it's standard or maybe even more aggressive or experimental. But what's going to happen here in this situation with the levels that we're seeing now, more so than we saw in Europe, the US, anywhere around the world, even Japan for that matter, it was a much slower process. There was valuations that got hot, but then they corrected back and kept on going, corrected back. As they got better, the markets moved higher. This is well in advance of any kind of levels that I have seen in a very, very long time. Now, that doesn't mean that it's going to drop overnight. It doesn't mean, in fact, it doesn't mean that it's not going to continue for some time. But the bet and the better play right now is that China is going to see some distribution. And it's going to happen, when it does happen, pretty fast, because you have all this leverage in the markets. If you think about it, those that get concerned about a move in their underlying portfolio will be that much more concerned as it happens quickly, because they are leveraged up. So a 6% move on a portfolio, let's say you have a portfolio and let's say it's not levered, and let's say the only thing you have invested in is the Shanghai index, well, you're down 6.5%. Well, if you levered up and you double, you just lost 13%, round number. That's a big hit in one day. And as that happens, you get closer to their new rules in terms of how much you can lever. creating a forced selling. Now, China has actually tightened their margin a few times over the last year. And each time it's met with a quick drop and then keeps on moving higher. But each time they tighten, it's a much higher level of requirement. And therefore, you get closer and closer and tighter to essentially the end game, which is no leverage, which isn't going to be the case, but no leverage. And therefore, you have to keep your portfolio valuation down. Because what happens is that every time that they tighten, you have to take more off the top. So we'll see what happens with this, but it does seem like this is going to be a combination 1-2 punch if Greece doesn't come through with any kind of concessions. And we'll talk about what they've happened over the weekend, which is more hogwash. As a matter of fact, we'll talk about what happened over the last week, which is pure hogwash. And both sides are lying right through their teeth. Both sides are doing absolutely nothing to bend and compromise. But you have a Greece that does any kind of anything that isn't in line with what market expectations are for concessions and for some kind of an agreement that will keep Greece in the euro, spook the markets a bit, China is going to see a big hit. The other thing that's going to be interesting to watch is whether or not there is any effect, as we mentioned earlier on, the markets at these levels with earnings coming down, next quarter's earnings actually being lowered again in terms of estimates outward, and many companies coming in with lower guidance than was hoped for, is whether or not, if possible, maybe, hasn't been so far, that economics will play any part in this, and whether or not we'll see that if, in fact, bad or negative or disappointing economics will actually have a negative effect on markets. Now, let's take a little rundown of what's happening next week, because we have a lot more things that we're going to see compared to the last week in terms of economics. And the big one being, of course, next Friday, which is going to be the jobs numbers. But let's run through the week really quickly, what to expect, and see how that's going to play out. So on Monday, we have personal income, personal spending. Expectations on personal income are for about a plus 0.3 increase from a prior zero month over month. Personal spending, we see a zero increase from a prior 0.4. We see PCE prices, that's important because it's kind of like in the inflation numbers. Looking at about a 0.2 expectation from a 0.1. Now, the ISM index, this is the manufacturing index. Now, the manufacturing has been interesting because we've seen that manufacturing factory orders, everything related to that sector or that general economic print has been weakening. Now, this is a high impact number when it comes to markets. The ISM index is the ISM and the ISM services. The ISM services is a big thing for the United States because about 70% of our economy is service related. But let's look at the ISM index for a second here. Expectations are for a 51. Now, over 50 is considered expansionary. Under 50 is considered contraction. We're expecting a 51 from a 51.5. Now, I don't know if analysts are being a little bit cautious here or they're doing their best to look at all the numbers that are been, you know, recently at play, the GDP, the read-through from GDP, as well as all the things we're seeing in the manufacturing sector. But what's really the whole major, I guess, the contrast and I guess a controversy has been, how is manufacturing slowing down if jobs numbers keep on playing really well? We've seen that last week's initial claims were still sub 300,000, really nicely holding there. We're seeing that the unemployment rate is currently 5.4. We're seeing that 200,000 plus are being added each and every month to the payrolls. Yet manufacturing is slowing. Factory orders, inventories, all concerning. Retail sales have been lousy. Kind of makes you want to scratch your head and wonder, what is it about the employment situation that is causing employers to continue adding, even though productivity has kind of been slumping a bit? Looking at productivity, as a matter of fact, let's see here, on Thursday, to be negative 2.8%. Unit labor costs are going to be 5.8% from 5.0. So we're seeing costs go up, productivity go down, jobs increase, manufacturing slowing. Isn't there something here that doesn't make a lot of sense? You're having an increase in the cost of your overall labor. Your productivity is going down. We have all this technology that's out there that's trying to make higher productivity at lower cost. It's not happening. Is it something to do with the dollar being higher? I can't see that. Something is off here. I'm not saying it's good or bad. I'm not making a real commitment as to anything because it's funky. It's really funky. You have to wonder what is so odd here. Factory orders last period were a plus 2.1%. We'll see this on Tuesday. They're forecasting it being a zero. The ISM services were 57.8. We're going to see the number on Wednesday. They're seeing it looks like it's going to be a 57. Consumer confidence we just saw last week was in line. This is the Michigan we saw. Okay, that's good. Initial claims are expected to be 285. Non-farm payrolls expectation to be 230 from 213. I mean, there's just something odd here. On Friday, we're going to see more. We're going to see the average work week expected to be 34.5, which has been increasing. Hourly earnings somewhat lower than maybe we want to see, but still on par with what we've been seeing, a 0.1 increase month over month. So we're seeing, again, just to kind of encapsulate this, economic numbers that are showing that productivity is down, jobs are up, manufacturing is down, overall retail spending is down, inventory is kind of going nowhere, GDP being revised lower to negative 0.7, but there's still hiring going on. This has got to be a major, major problem for the Fed as they're trying to discern what to do here because the numbers just aren't making a lot of sense. This should not be the case that you're seeing all this employment being added when in fact things aren't doing well from retail, factory orders, manufacturing, ISM, services index, GDP being negative. It's just something's got to give. I don't know what it's going to be. It's either going to be that we're going to see a major startup of all of this into the second half of the year, starting now, or major revisions down and a lot of slowing in the hiring and employment sector. You would think that should be starting immediately. You would think that with all the things that have gone on with regard to oil prices and all the layoffs, retail slowing down, there should be, and technology, by the way, kicking up pretty hard, that we should see a real slowdown in hiring, but it hasn't been the case. Kind of weird. Doesn't make sense from a textbook standpoint. Doesn't make sense from a lot of standpoints, except for the fact that the idea is that, well, there's a lot of extra money right now. We see the world is doing okay. But yet, at the same time, the dollar being higher, you'd think that, you know, you wouldn't have all these employees if they're not selling as much to anywhere outside the U.S. So the U.S. itself, the economy is okay, but maybe we're seeing a lag due to all the international components. Because a big slowdown in emerging markets, and of course, we're seeing that there is a bit of a kick up and a better numbers coming out of Europe recently. But that slowdown in China, Japan just, you know, doing nothing. Obviously, their yen, just the currency keeps on going lower. 124 to the dollar these days. That's just ridiculous. So we're seeing this movement of currencies that is affecting much of the world, causing slowdown in much of the international component and the global side of the U.S. sales and staples and, you know, anything related to exports. But hiring is still up. And again, I just keep on mentioning this because it's very hard to understand what's happening here. And maybe maybe the revision to the GDP number that we saw last week was the start of the something's got to give. The something that's got to give is that you're going to see a slowdown in the economy, even though we're seeing better hiring. Clearly, we're seeing that inflation has pretty much hit the number, give or take, that the Fed is looking to see. Of course, they'll adjust that to be a higher number because they want to inflate and they want to keep their whole stimulus package going because you can't ever get out of that, it seems. And they want to keep their bond buying program behind the scenes where they're reinvesting their principal and interest payments to more bonds. They got to do that because otherwise bonds will pretty much collapse. They're the largest buyer of bonds these days, especially treasuries. So it's going to be interesting to see how these all play, because next week, if you look at all the things that are coming on the docket for economics, all these are the things that really are the most important when it comes to looking at this big picture that I'm mentioning, which is the balancing act that we have to look at from hiring to economic growth or contraction in the U.S. Now, with more hiring, you would expect that more spending, not happening. Lower gas price that we saw, you expect more spending, not happening. Maybe it's the productivity. Maybe it's just too many people out there right now and a lot of people hanging out at the water cooler or smoking cigarettes or doing whatever they're doing outside and hanging out and not really putting in everything they can to ramp it up. But I wouldn't expect that to be the case, because there's so much oversight and so much ability for companies these days to really understand the minute-by-minute productivity and production and overall ability of the company to maintain their profitability, to make sure that they keep that really sharp level of bottom line when it comes to earnings and their overall margins. Again, something's just a little out of whack here. Well, watch for this next week. Again, Monday's going to be personal income, personal spending, ISM index, construction spending, which looks like it's going to be up a little bit. Tuesday, factory orders, auto sales. Wednesday, mortgage index from MBA. ADP employment change will be the first level we see. ISM is going to be later in the day. Fed beige book, always something to be excited about, where the Fed comes in and says that there is moderate to increasing growth, blah, 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 blah. That's going to be on Wednesday in the afternoon. Thursday, we're going to see initial claims, continuing claims, productivity, unit labor costs. And Friday, non-farm payrolls, unemployment rate, hourly earnings, average work week, and at the end of the day, consumer credit, which also looks like it's going to be dropping from $20 billion down to about $15. What's interesting about consumer credit is that while we all think that lower amounts of credit outstanding and debt outstanding are actually a good thing, you know, you have people paying down their credit, not using their credit cards, having more money to spend eventually because they're not paying this all back to banks and interest, et cetera. No, markets like high levels of credit. Markets like to see when consumers are adding to their credit, because what does that mean? They're spending it. You don't just get credit. You know, you add to your credit. So if you have a credit card that's maybe a $10,000 limit and it's zeroed out, well, what happens is maybe you increase that and the credit outstanding then becomes a number where you can see that people are spending. But this is going to be, looks like at least a $5 billion reduction from last month. $5 billion. Which means people are more content to pay off and to save than they are to spend. So keep an eye on all this. I'm kind of curious. Next week, we'll talk a little bit about some of this, how this is going to play out with markets. And is it going to be just as it has been, just looking at the employment situation and saying, okay, employment is better. We're really happy. That's a good sign for the economy, because long-term, better employment, well, what does it mean? Better employment means that there's more money in the system, more people that have money because they have jobs. More jobs mean more spending on just everything and anything. Or is it going to be that we actually look at some of the economics here and say, well, these are what this means. And in fact, are we going to say, well, at the end of the day, when we add up all the things that happened next week, we look at it and say, well, it looks like the employment may be better, but yet the other things are worse. Therefore, we think that the Fed will stay in. I don't know. There may be a point where unemployment rates get so low that the Fed has no choice but to start raising interest rates. And then, of course, many of the talking heads right now are saying, well, if they raise rates, that's a good thing. I personally believe that raising rates actually will be good, not crazy numbers. But if you start raising rates, let me back up. One of the big things that, and one of the big reasons that central banks around the world have been very much involved in the whole idea of stimulus, liquidity, quantitative easing, bringing rates down and holding rates down, is because they want to make sure that we don't have any kind of deflation in the economy. They want to make sure that people are out there spending and actually bringing up the value of risk assets, commodities, et cetera. Obviously not working in some categories, working in others, okay? But here's what's interesting. if you're afraid of deflation, which is basically that people will wait to spend because they believe that longer term prices will be lower on whatever that particular product is or in an economy in total, why would you try to keep interest rates really low? Move them up a little bit. Get people disturbed. Get them saying, you know what? Interest rates are not going to be low forever. If I'm going to refinance, I need to do it now. If I'm going to buy a house with a mortgage, I need to do it now. If, in fact, I need to do anything, I need to do it now. Because if I don't do it now, if rates go up, it may be more expensive for me to do in the future. Therefore, you defeat the whole idea of having a deflation situation setting in. You beat it. Keeping rates low for an exceptionally long time gets people very used to the idea that they're going to stay that way for an exceptionally long time. And as such, it gets them lazy. They don't do anything. You want to increase rates ever so slightly, at least to get people off their keisters to do something. It would push them to do something. Doesn't that make sense? Let's spend a couple of minutes talking about Greece, because that's going to be in the headlines next week, as there has been, I would say, no real movement by either side to do anything that would be considered conciliatory or concession or compromise. What you are seeing is a lot of trial balloons. You see a lot of various hopeful comments. You know, it reminds me of back when the financial crisis was really in the throes, in the heat of it. And you saw all these various congressmen and senators, here comes the cavalry, we're going to save everything. All these little things that were popping up out of nowhere from various sources so they can get their name out there. What we're seeing now is that there are unconfirmed rumors constantly floating through the market that there has been some concessions made, there's been movement, and then denied. There was some Greek officials that said that there was a very good meeting that went on, that there was going to be some kind of arrangement and agreement. And then probably within 2 hours, that was denied and totally shot down by German officials. Then we saw the next day another discussion that came out and another rumor, so it seemed, that, yeah, we're close and things are going to go within the next couple of days. We have some really good meetings. And we've made a lot of headway with our creditors from the Greece side. And then it was denied. Greece keeps on moving the self-imposed deadlines that we have been seeing on a regular basis. The next thing they have is about a almost $2 billion IMF payment that is due over the next couple of weeks. Now, this is going to be a big issue because the IMF has a different set of circumstances in terms of allowing for quote-unquote defaults. There's a whole sequence of things that go into play automatically if the IMF is not paid back. Now, I'd venture to say that somehow, Greece is going to pay back the IMF because they know the IMF has really no ability, or at least hasn't in the past. We don't know. Maybe they'll just change the rules midstream. That's possible with this economy and market and market environment and the governments we have now. They don't stick to anything. But the IMF has a very strict process of if you miss your payment, the clock starts ticking, 2 weeks for this, another week for that, and then boom, you're in default. Now, whether or not that would be considered a default from CDS standpoint, from the standpoint of a default where insurance will kick in through the CDS insurance of credit, and whether or not we see that there's going to be an actual payment of sorts, and if Greece then would be considered in full default and all the different dominoes that will fall from there, or if in fact it's just very much contained within the IMF, saying, oh, that's a different situation. You know, we don't worry about that on regular stuff. It's just the IMF payment that's due. I would say that they probably, due to the fact that they don't want to have this automatic clock ticking, they'd much rather default against the euro because there'll probably be all sorts of changes made to the rules and you won't have any payments made through the CDS insurance and defaults won't really be defaults. They'll call them some other name. The Greek government probably is going to want to make sure they pay the IMF. That's what I expect. Now, when they pay the IMF, there's going to be big smiles on a lot of faces saying, oh, Greece is able to pay. But I think what it's going to do is just buy them more time. It's going to allow for them to have a little bit more time to keep on yanking at the strings of the Eurozone to try to see if they will take the many billions of dollars that they have outstanding and maybe take their interest rates down to zero and extend their lifetime of their payments, maybe 100 years, so that there is a significant amount of waiting that can occur until any kind of real movement happens. Listen, at the end of the day, nobody wants Greece to default. Nobody really wants Greece to exit the euro. Even those that are really hardliners in terms of this whole discussion with this new anti-austerity regime that's in Greece right now, the government that's in right now, they don't want to default. I mean, come on. They want to get concessions, but they're just playing it out as well as they can because they know that they have really the ability to do so at this point. They have the edict from the voting bloc that put them into office that this is what they will do. But they don't want to default. They just want to restructure. Kind of like a credit counseling service for countries. So what's going to happen here is we're going to see probably a lot more of a stalemate go on and realize something. Already we're seeing the spillover into other countries. This is something we talked about months ago. What's going to happen is the anti-austerity program and fanatics in Spain now are gaining a lot of headway in the elections. And the new government is starting to come in and some things are happening there. Protests are happening. A lot happening already there. Italy is next. Portugal going to follow. Already we're seeing that all of the bad actors and the countries that were supposed to be saved are actually turning on the euro, the eurozone. They're turning on those that have afforded them life. That's the truth here. They're biting the hand that fed them all of the excess money that allowed them to continue on, pay for things, and not default where they really should have. Now, it would not have been good if they did so, by the way. We don't want defaults. I mean, we do not want countries borrowing money in excess of what they can repay and defaulting. Of course, the Eurozone doesn't give a crap about that. They just keep on pushing money out to all these countries, regardless of their ability to pay, thinking that things will just get better in the future by just keep on throwing more money at the situation. And if, in fact, they come in default, what we'll do is just give more money and let them just keep on running up the tab. Never having a situation where they have to actually pay the bill, even if they need to. So that's why I'm saying that the IMF is probably going to get paid back, but there's going to be a big question as to how far they're going to take this, how far Greece is going to take this, how far the Eurozone and the ECB are going to take this, because each side is saying, hey, I'm not doing what you want. And rightfully so. Now, Greece has a commitment. They have, whether it was a previous government or the current government, there's a commitment on paper and an agreement. They're going to borrow this money. They're going to pay it back. So that's what they have to live by. That's the truth. That's the fact. Was it a bad deal? Maybe. Tough crap. If you didn't get this money, you would have been under already. And you know what? You took the money. Now, they're saying that the money was pushed on them. They're saying this was never in the best interest of Greece. They had to do it. They didn't have a choice because of their, you know, their arrangement with the ECB in the Eurozone. But I don't buy that. They didn't have to spend the money, did they? They could have taken the money, not spent it. So let's kind of grow up here a little bit. Greece needs to grow up. They can't just keep on doing this. Well, they can, because the ECB allows them to. But there needs to be more teeth in this. Greece needs to remember that while there is a new government here, they are still part of the agreements that they made previously that they have to live up to. Next week is going to be pretty interesting. The next 2 weeks, really. But next week, we're going to see a lot more rumors. As we get closer and closer, a lot more rumors flying, a lot more discussion flying, a lot more speculation about what's going to happen, whether or not the banks in this can stay, you know, solvent. We own a small position in the National Bank of Greece, NBG, with the idea that there's no way that they're going to be allowed to default as a country overall and therefore have all their money pulled. Already we're seeing, even last week, that there was additional monies that were allowed to be passed through to the banks to maintain their overall level of deposit requirements because there is a massive amount of money exiting the country. And really the only source of funding right now for the banks is the ECB. So if Greece defaults and pisses off the ECB, and the ECB says you're no longer going to get any kind of bailout assistance if, in fact, you don't do what you're supposed to do here, the financial system in Greece will totally seize up. And there are not that many options on the table that would really do wonders for the economy if, in fact, that happens. So while the austerity programs that are currently in place in Greece have not been helping out that much, and in fact, they have been building their debt significantly, a lot of that is due to the fact that the government is really poor at their overall planning and have not really provided a good amount of changes to allow for growth of that country. It's very sad, the situation in Greece. There's no question about it. The unemployment rate is the highest in the Eurozone. That's a problem. But they have to take on the responsibility for which they have signed on to, and they also have to make reforms that are reasonable. Now, of course, the Greece thinks that, well, these reforms are unreasonable. We can't live up to these. There's no way, because it's not, and we know it hasn't helped them so far. Anyway, watch next week. We're going to go back and forth, back and forth, back and forth many times on this. It will be jarring to markets. If, in fact, Greece does default, it will not be pretty. And it's not just Greece, of course. It's the entire Eurozone that will have problems. So remember that. We do not want a Greek exit. We don't. It would be catastrophic because it would really set Europe for a really big spin. The euro will drop. The dollar will climb. The dollar climbing is going to cause all sorts of problems for commodities, all sorts of problems for many of the countries that we have that do global export, that rely on a reasonably priced dollar. And right now, the currencies are set up in a way that there's a lot of people leaning on the euro short. And this kind of situation happens, the euro will tumble. Not the best thing in the world. Anyway, it is June, just about June. We're actually talking here, it's the end of May, but it's June, just about June. The days are getting longer. Sun is out for a much longer period. It's warmer outside. I hope you're enjoying it. Hope you're doing something fun. We've been catching some fish lately. Caught some dolphins, some kingfish. What else do we catch here? Caught triple tail. Kind of a weird fish. But we'll talk about that another time. If you have any questions, of course, you can write me at askandrew@thedisciplinedinvestor.com. Go check out thedisciplinedinvestor.com. And of course, we live stream through Periscope on Tuesday evenings, 10 o'clock in the evening Eastern Time with myself and John C. Dvorak for DH Unplugged. Make sure to check that out as well. Other than that, I think we're done. Watch the economics next week. Not much in the earnings front. Haven't heard of any M&A yet, but I'm sure there'll be some next week. Thanks for joining me, and I'll see you next week. Bye-bye.
The Disciplined Investor Podcast is sponsored in part by Horowitz & Company, a registered investment advisor and money manager. The information presented in this podcast is not intended to be used as the sole basis of any investment decisions, nor should it be construed as advice designed to meet the investment needs of any particular investor. Some discussion contains forward-looking statements which are based on current expectations and differences can be expected. The Disciplined Investor's host, Andrew Horowitz, is a certified financial planner and registered investment advisor, regulated in various states. None of the information presented should be construed as an offer to sell or buy any particular security. As always, use your best judgment when investing.